This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Who's your favorite rock star?
You're Prince. Morris.
Bruce.
Prince.
Bruce.
Bruce Levine.
Just had a text from Bruce Levine.
Hi, Bruce.
Noted baseball aficionado. Been around town for a long time.
Score Baseball Insider.
Bruce, I really do appreciate the way you communicate up front, transparent, direct. And you've been doing it for years. Happy to come on your show anytime. It doesn't matter if you're in Chicago or New York or L.A. or whatever. Like, I enjoy talking to you and Matt. It was good to talk to you today.
Thanks, Gabe.
Covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Can I ask you a question about that?
I'm going to go through my speech.
Yes, sir.
Take a look at it.
With the idea that...
And the essence of Bellinger, I think every team wants it on their vanity. Bruce, you step on my lines once more. And I'm telling you, you're the back of the group.
Bruce Levine.
Spiegel guy.
What's his first name?
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Is that your station?
I don't know.
On 670 The Score.
He doesn't own the station, but he owns baseball coverage on this station. He joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa app today. Bruce, thanks for joining us. It's been a part of a story over the last week since the Cubs have gotten back from Japan. What has been their strategy on dealing with that trip and all of the extra that goes along with traveling that far and then getting themselves back right?
You know, I think it's just about rest and also being prepared. So how do you do both? In 2000, when the Cubs went to Japan and played the Mets, they came back and they were in bad shape. They lost three in a row. That year, they started the season right away within a couple days. This time, they have a week in between. So there is time to recover, and hopefully that's happening right now. But there's no surefire way of gearing yourself back up again after a trip. I know a lot of people don't want to hear about the fact that you have jet lag, you're a professional athlete, and you can't get your game back together. But nonetheless, it takes a little while. And as much as the Cubs love going to Japan, part of the executives and the coaching staff would tell you that this was a major disruption for him as well.
Well, you know, and one thing that makes it obvious, Bruce, is that the version of the team we're going to see tomorrow in Arizona is different from the version of the team that we saw in Japan. You know, so like, you got all offseason, you got all spring. Tomorrow is going to be more representative of what Craig Counsell thinks of his group. Right. The lineup is going to be different. The bullpen is going to be different. So what do we get that's different tomorrow, as to look at this team as a starting point for the journey of the season?
Look past the lineup and into the bullpen, where you have the semblance of power arms. Okay, so you know, Merriweather and you know, a few of the others have already been there. You add on Presley to the end of the game. You've seen Hodge come on as a real legitimate bullpen guy at the end of last year. So you're going to see more 98, okay, at the end of the game. Not Presley, but you know, Presley knows how to get people out, and he's been a closer in this league for a long time, albeit it wasn't in 2024. So I think the bullpen is the key to the success. If you look at the failure of the 2024 Chicago Cubs, you can look to May and June, and the complete failure of the bullpen is their downfall, as they came out of a 17-13 start in March and April last year.
So to your point, if it's Presley and Porter Hodge at the back, who else is in the circle of trust? You mentioned Merriweather. Like, who else gets a chance up top to be trusted with a lead?
Well, believe it or not, you know, Brad Keller, who just made this team, is going to be that. And, you know, he was a starter in baseball for a long time, came in on a minor league deal. And whether it's pitching lab or just that he's healthy again, he was blown at 97, 98 for most of spring training and made this team. Look for that arm to be essential out of the bullpen. Again, they only have one left-handed pitcher. That's it. The rest are, they're counting on some real power. And then don't forget about Javier Assad, who's going to be rehabbing in AAA, you know, from that oblique that he strained significantly in early February. That is the wild card for the Cubs and their team as to whether he's a starter or he goes back to being a significant piece of their bullpen.
Baseball is amazing, and what it does to us is also amazing, Bruce, where I was saying in speech yesterday, like, are we really already talking about lineup construction for the Cubs? And, yeah, and seeing people do that on social media, and I know that you guys talked a little bit with Craig about that. What's his reaction right now to people having questions about his lineup 2 games into a season that then has a 7-day pause in that season?
He doesn't give a blink, okay? He could care less about people's ideas about the lineup. You know, we've talked to him ad nauseum over the last year, maybe even a little more, about Pete Crow Armstrong having to be a leadoff man, right? So he doesn't really listen to any outside noise. All he knows is that if a guy is not getting on base, if his OPS isn't in you know, the 800 area, he prefer that the guy bats toward the bottom of the order. Now, do you have a lot of those guys? Well, the top OPS guys are going to be batting 1 through 4. Number 5 is a real question mark right now, okay? Is it going to be Matt Shaw? Is it going to be Horner coming back? Will Amaya and Kelly step up to being productive parts of the offense this year as catchers? These are the things that we're going to be looking at here. 5 through 9 in the lineup, you know, that's going to be maybe ever-changing right now.
Well, that's where I'm interested, and I'll take it. You guys want to call me a lineupista?
Lineupista?
You can. It's my favorite Clash song, by the way. But the difference between having Matt Shaw at 8, as he was yesterday, as a rookie, go ahead, kid, figure it out, and having Matt Shaw at 5, as he was in Tokyo, the difference in that could be him having the at-bat that he had in the 9th inning against the Dodgers in the second game, because sometimes it comes up that way.
Steve,
it was him instead. Hold on.
It was him instead of
Dansby Swanson.
I'm just
in that 9th inning at-bat, and now it won't be. Well, this is a better, more representative lineup. And like I said at the top, this is opening day. This one is how he actually starts with how he thinks about his team. That matters to me, Bruce.
Number 5 hitter was going to be Bregman, wasn't it?
Damn right.
So I think we can dance around this for a long time, and we'll see the eventual evolution of Shaw and Workman as far as their readiness to hit major league pitching.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality was they were 2 hitters short in that lineup going into the offseason. They successfully, if you want to talk about Cam Smith being traded to Houston, They successfully got themselves a right fielder for 1 year. So I know you guys talked about that in a segment today, and it's real. And you know, Cub fans don't want to be looking at, you know, a Lou Brock or a John Garland trade again down the line and say, hey, we got 1 year of this guy and these guys are all-stars. Well, you know, that's the way it goes. I think, you know, right now the Cubs are trying to be, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, have they improved that much, or has the rest of the division refused to improve enough to make them non-favorites to win the division?
I think it's a little column A and column B. I do think the Cubs roster is better. I also think that I don't know what the hell the Cardinals are doing organizationally. I'm frankly surprised that they are now seemingly taking 2 years off from being a contender. That doesn't really usually how it works. Milwaukee could have done more but didn't, but they feel like they have an advantage in player development and managerial.
They also added some veterans in that rotation. Nestor Cortez, Jose Quintana when he's healthy. There's others too.
And Cincinnati, I think, is close, but they won't do the things that they need to do to win.
They're missing a chance. They're counting on Tito Francona, your buddy Tito, Bruce. Yeah. They're counting on him to be magic.
He hasn't had a base hit since the 1980s, so I don't know what he's going to do for their lineup there. But I think that, you know, the conversation you guys are having is real, and it's, you know, it's a jumping off point for the season for all Cub fans, and, you know, certainly what we do in sports radio, and that is talk about whether or not this is constructed as a 90-win team, mm-hmm. or are they winning this division by default?
Bruce, to your knowledge, would the Astros have been interested in Matt Shaw? Was that even a possibility? Did Triantos come up? Did Owen Casey come up? Because Cam Smith making that team is—it's a little jarring, and that's the one prospect that went.
Yeah, I mean, look—they talked to the Astros all year. They made a couple deals with them, right? So, I mean, all those names came up, and Casey was certainly somebody that was a hitter of interest, but. You know, came up lame at the end of last year and then re-hurt himself in spring training and wasn't able to perform. He's still considered, I would say, the top hitter this side of Shaw coming out of the minor league system, you know, this next year or so. But again, you know, how long will this injury, the groin injury that was pretty significant for him, keep him down?
Bruce, it's hard to know what, if anything, matters for the White Sox as the season opens up. Yeah. What's interesting to you about them?
I think the fan base. So you are and always have been a White Sox fan, Lawrence, right?
Mm-hmm.
So with that hat on, are you more interested in going out and watching this team, even though it might lose 110 games again this year? Are you more interested in watching a team with younger players that are coming up in the system rather than just watching aging veterans fill those positions until the trading deadline? Will you go out to the ballpark 7 times rather than 2 this year to watch something like that?
I don't think so, Bruce. But here's where I'm at. I like some of the moves that Chris Getz has made in the front office. And I'm interested to see how it plays out. The thing that scares me, though, is like I look at a guy like Brian Bannister and I go, that was a smart move by the White Sox. He's going to help their pitching infrastructure. And then I go, he's probably too smart to stay here. And what I mean is someone's going to look at that and go, hey, that guy can really help us, too. And we can put the general manager title on him. So I'm already worried about the smart people who the White Sox have brought in being moved away from the organization and then them starting over again from scratch.
Yeah, and Matt and Lawrence, I don't think you can convince White Sox fans that these guys are smart guys until the product on the field improves, right?
Yep.
There's no trust there. And to be honest with you, I don't think Jerry Reinsdorf trusts it either until he sees an improvement. There's, you know, whether Jerry is running this team, owning this team for the next year or two or three, or it's somebody else, the proof is going to have to be in the pudding here. And if, you know, unfortunately, they lose 4, 5, 6 pitchers to Tommy John surgery and they don't have fortification in any depth, then you're going to be watching a bad product again in 2025, maybe rolling into 2026. Chris Getz's job is not forever, okay? Contrary to the theory that all White Sox general managers get as long as they want to either fail or succeed, that's not going to be the case this time.
Chase Meidroth is a shortstop and a potential leadoff hitter who didn't have a great spring, but he had an OPS of over 800 at AAA Worcester last year, part of the Garrett Crochet trade package from Boston. I was hoping he was going to be opening day shortstop and leadoff, and that would be a young guy to be interested in. But he is now going to start at AAA for the sake of Jacob Amaya, so they don't have to DFA that 4A veteran. Explain it to me, Bruce, if you can.
I have no explanation for you other than the idea that no wine before it's time is the theory in the Sox organization, meaning we heard Montgomery all winter long. He was going to be the starting shortstop. He gets hurt for 10 days. They feel he's not ready to play shortstop in the major leagues. Meidroth needs a little bit more work. Don't think that both of them won't be up. They could be up by the end of April or early May. I mean, there's no one standing in front of them that will prevent them from progressing through the minor leagues in the first month of the season. So, you know, don't feel like this is a sentence to the minor leagues for both guys all year. Anybody that is showing in the minor leagues that he's ready for competition will be ready to play. However, I do applaud them for restraining using both guys when they know they're better off developing for at least another month, maybe down at AAA.
Bruce, I want to get a technical question in with you because it's something that I've seen and I'm like, man, it's concerning to me, but it's probably not concerning to anyone else. When I look at Matt Shaw's leg kick when he swings, I've got concerns that it might open up some holes in his swing. Has anyone over the last couple of months talked about him at the technically as a hitter down there? Is there any worry that that's a thing?
Well, as counsel said to me right before they left to Japan, and directly to your question, you wouldn't teach the mechanics of Matt Shaw to anybody coming up, okay? And this is a guy, if you remember his swing and how high his bat was back in the day when he was a player in the major leagues, you wouldn't teach that either. He said, but when it comes to getting the bat in position to hit the ball hard and hit it to where he wants to, he's usually there. But none of the mechanics, as you mentioned, Lawrence, and astutely look at this, you would teach any of that. And look at just how his left leg sets up before he even goes into the leg kick, where the left toe is pointed in toward his body. None of that in his swing you would teach. However, the guy is really short and compact to the ball and hits the ball really hard. So that is why he's getting a chance to be the third baseman for the Chicago Cubs. I still see the possibility of a platoon at some point at third base because Workman, I don't think you can deny Workman until he proves that he can't hit at the major league level. You don't want him sitting there. I don't think that's going to benefit the team. So against certain right-handed pitching, I think you're going to see Workman playing third base and all around. I mean, he's got to get in that lineup. He's been, the talk of spring training. He's a Rule 5. You have to keep him all year or else give him back to Detroit. He's going to play.
Yeah, your colleague Elise Menneker over at Marquee made a good point on Run on Sunday that Matt Shaw is a real good athlete who's been a real good hitter everywhere, and if he needs to adjust a little bit, he will. Like, it's not like he's locked and loaded with that for the whole year. If he starts thinking that it's a hindrance, maybe there'll be some adjustments. Bruce, baseball's here, buddy. We appreciate you.
Yeah, exciting, guys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Okay.
That's Bruce Levine, our baseball beat reporter. It's just hard to mechanically break down and rebuild a swing.
Understood.
In a season.
Understood.
It's impossible, especially when it's as interesting and violent as his is. But I'm encouraged by Bruce being like, the hands are still really good and he's getting to it quick.
And if you look at it, he starts a little backwards, but once the pitch comes, he's square. He's square by the time the pitch comes. Anybody get the Paul Masson reference? The The Orson Welles reference?
No.
Okay.
No, we didn't get it.
I'll text Bruce myself.
High Noon is coming up next. There's been a couple of interesting things that have happened in the Luigi case that I need to share with people.
All right. Let's do that.
And yours? He'll figure something out next here on The Score.
Thanks, Bruce.
Somebody read Wikipedia.
Unrewarding.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.